everyone, and welcome to episode 14 of season 11 of Movie Around Midnight, the Daily Podcast, where we curry here our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today to finish off his stint is Shane Cantu of the Wasteland Reviewer. Welcome back to the show, Shane.
Thank you so much for having me for a third time, and I'm here to redeem myself with some World War II movie trivia at the end. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, there won't be any World War II movie trivia. There will just be the, you know, the name that World War II movie. Right. That one question, but
I have one chance.
You didn't do as terrible as you make it seem. You're fine. You know, you got 2 out of 5, so that's still pretty good. So don't worry about it. All right. So episode 14 begins with Winters giving instructions to his men and ends with Winters preparing himself as the plane moves along. So we ended things yesterday with Meehan giving his last-minute instructions to Winters, and this minute begins with Winters giving a little bit of a pep talk to the men around him in his plane. You know, as we've discussed, there are 12 men on each plane. So basically it means that Winters has 11 of his men that are under his command for the jump itself. You know, which I mean, it's pretty amazing that, you know, you don't have enough officers, so you're gonna have a lot of the sergeants that are gonna be leading planes also. Yep. And stuff like that. So, you know, it's splitting up the entire Easy Company into so many different men.
Absolutely. It,
you know, so many different packets of groups and stuff like that.
One of those moments.
You know, so I like.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it was one of those moments where you just really realize, like, the scale of things and how big this operation is, putting this all together. So I think a lot of this segment is just, like, kind of sitting back and just realizing, like, this is all this motion, which is pretty astounding.
Yes. I mean, there isn't that much dialogue in this particular 5 minute segment, but, there's a lot to describe anyway. Mm-hmm. So Winter starts with his little pep talk and he goes, "Second platoon, listen up. Good luck. God bless you. I'll see you in the assembly area." And, you know, it's short, it's sweet, but it's also in some ways, I don't know if the word friendly would be the right way to describe it, but it's he does it in a way, his men respect him for the way that he does it. You know, and then he walks over to each of the men who was lying on the ground and pulls each man up one by one. And we see also how heavy the packs are that these guys are carrying. You know, that's why they're all lying on the ground. It's actually funny that it looks like they're on like a seesaw type of thing, you know, because like one after the other, or maybe during a tug of war type of thing.
Well, and I think the speech is short, sweet, to the point, but it shows care and respect without it being overly familiar. And I think that's something that, you know, 2 episodes ago we discussed about Winter's perspective on this. And then I think it shows a lot him going over and helping them all up and giving each of them that moment. And yet it does certainly reinforce how much they're carrying. And I think that just, it keeps reinforcing some perspective, because you might not think about that as much once they get into the battle, but it's important to remember. It's like, this is hard. What they're about to do. It's even just hard walking with all the stuff that they have, let alone all the things that they're going to have to do after this.
But what's really interesting is, you know, we've been told that there are 12 men on each of these planes, but there's 14 guys on the ground. There's 7 and 7. And then, so it's 14 guys on the ground plus Winter. So maybe there actually was 15, even though I know that it said that there were only 12 on each plane. That's really weird. Maybe they were just cramming them in also. Because when they call out, they don't start with 14. They actually even start with, I think they start with 10, don't they? Or 11? 11, okay. I have to try and remember how that started at the beginning of this episode. Mm-hmm. But It's very weird. Because I'm pretty sure that there was much more, that there were less. Because I'm trying to remember, how they showed the whole thing. Or maybe it's only the beginning of the second episode that we're going to see them. Well, obviously the beginning of the second episode is right before they jump, but then we're going to get the numbers at that point also. Yeah, I'm now a little confused. The number of men on the on this plane getting ready to jump. You have any
Question and
idea
some
about
math
that?
here. I'll be frank, I didn't really put that much thought into it in the moment, but I guess that'd be something interesting to go back and try to figure out, rewatching this segment of the episode.
Okay, well, I mean, going a little bit ahead, when they show them getting ready to jump in, we'll have this episode next week. At the beginning of the second part, they start with 10. You have 10, okay. So that's even more confusing, because the numbers don't make any sense. You have 10 or 12 or 15. It's not like you have extra. It's not like a jury where you have alternate juries.
Yeah, like,
First, you're not gonna have alternate paratroopers.
nope, everybody's going. So,
Hopefully everyone's going.
that's the plan, at least, right?
We're gonna find out
So,
that is the plan. But again, it just this little scene shows the type of commander Winters
yeah.
is, which people might disagree, but this is basically the story of Winters, even though it is the story of Easy Company. But I think that the idea behind this whole story is to show how Winters what type of leader he was, in order to help keep as many of these men alive as possible.
Well, and I think just from,
Throughout the course of a
yeah, and I
year.
think just from like a storytelling standpoint too, like having that like anchoring person, obviously he's the one leading it. We spend time with each of these soldiers in Easy Company, but like he's the one that's holding this all together. So I like the vibe that I got from this first episode of the show is that he is out in front, being one of the at least one of the central characters of the story for sure.
Exactly. It's a little hard to recognize some of the men. I'm sure there are people who are able to recognize every single one of them, but I noticed that he picks up Joe Toy. That's the main guy that I can tell that he's picking up along the way, because of the amount of equipment that all these guys have. And then we see as he's still picking guys up, or giving him a hand up, we see the other guy's trying to get into the plane, and it actually looks like a Abbott and Costello type of situation, because you see these guys in these overly packed uniforms and equipment, trying to get into a small doorway,
Yeah.
and someone's like pushing them in. So I just think it's very funny this way they show that. So, I was starting to think about the fact that all the amount of equipment that these guys were all wearing. So it reminded me that in the book of Band of Brothers, they give a list of everything that they had. Now, I mean, I know that yesterday, was it yesterday or the day before? No, two days ago, Joe Toy gave us a list of all the different things that he was putting that he needed to take. But so obviously some of it is gonna be redundant to what I'm gonna read now, but I still think it works. So the I'm gonna it's a long paragraph, but I'm gonna read what it says here. It says, climbing aboard the C-47s was difficult because of all the gear each man carried. Individuals were overloaded, following the age-old tendency of soldiers going into combat to attempt to be ready for every conceivable emergency. The vest and long drawers issued each man were impregnated to ward off a possible chemical attack. It made them cumbersome. They stank. They itched. They kept in body heat and caused torrents of sweat. The combat jacket and trousers were also treated, The men carried a pocket knife in the lapel of their blouses to be able to be used to cut themselves out of their harness if they landed in a tree. I actually never thought about that fact, and it's really interesting, you know, because you see movies where, you know, guys get caught in trees, and the idea that every one of them had a pocket knife in order to cut themselves out if that happened is just amazing to think about.
Good planning.
In their baggy trousers pockets, they had a spoon, a razor, socks, cleaning patches, flashlight, maps, 3-day supply of carry rations, an emergency ration packet, 4 chocolate bars, a pack of charms, powdered coffee, sugar, and matches, ammunition, a compass, 2 fragmentation grenades, an anti-tank mine, a smoke grenade, a gammon bomb, which was a two-pound plastic explosive for use against tanks, cigarettes, 2 cartons per man. The soldier topped his uniform with a webbing belt and braces, a .45 pistol, standard for non-coms and officers. Privates had to get their own, and most did, like you saw with Floyd the other day. Water canteen, shovel, first aid kit, and bayonet. Over this went his parachute harness, his main parachute in his backpack, and reserve parachute hooked on in the front. A gas mask was strapped to his left leg and a jump knife bayonet to his right. Across his chest, the soldier slung his musette bag with his spare underwear and ammunition, and in some cases, TNT sticks, along with broken down rifle or machine gun or mortar diagonally up and down across his front under his reserve chute pack, leaving both hands free to handle the risers. Over everything he wore, his Mae West life jacket. Finally, he put on his helmet. I mean, that is just, that's a load of stuff.
That is.
There's no question about that.
Just all of that. It's like, because I know when we talked about it 2 episodes ago, too, it's like, I work at a college. And it's so funny talking to some of my students and them talking about having all their textbooks and carrying all those things and remembering carrying my backpack as a student. And then just being like, think about that, but like double. And like all of these things that they're carrying. But that's the thing. It's like, it's not like you're going to be able to like go back and get more. It's you're being dropped in here and you need to make sure that you're prepared for all these different types of situations. But like, hey, we weren't sending them in underprepared for sure. So then it's just a matter of bearing the weight of it all.
Correct. Yeah. But again, I like the way that the book takes the time to explain all these different things.
Well, and that's a advantage of a book, being able to take that time and get into that detail. And I think the show did a fine job of like giving us enough moments where like we can tell, like we might not know every little itty bitty thing that they have in there, but we know it's heavy because we're seeing them struggling trying to even just get into the plane. So
that's right. And then we're back with Winters picking up more men. I probably should have counted how many men he actually lifts up to see if it actually is all 14. It probably is, since they, you know, show us 14 guys on the ground.
No, when I go back and watch this, I'm going to be counting now.
You see, I'm glad I'm able to give you ideas.
There you go.
And, I mean, the music here is just amazing. I'm a big Michael Kamen fan, and I think he just did a wonderful job on this miniseries. The theme music at the beginning is also great, but here, just it's a very somber tone of the music here as they're getting ready, you know, to get on the plane. I like the way that they do that.
I know, because I had my 3 segments that I was coming on for, and just the biggest thing that stood out to me about this particular segment was, you know, we're seeing so much going on, but it's the music. It's just how much feeling it gets out of you watching all of this. And that was one of the biggest things, because I've watched the first 3 episodes that I've gotten through this, and consistently throughout, this score just keeps reinforcing, just there's a feel of importance, significance, and weight to what's going on in this show. And this score just captures that so perfectly. Kamen does a great job of composing something that gets that kind of feeling.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite composers. Yeah, I like what he did also from the Earth to the Moon. There's a whole list of his stuff that I love of his. Obviously, he did Die Hard also. Yeah, I just did a quick count and I actually counted 16. So now I'm even more confused.
It's a
so
mystery.
I don't know what to tell you.
Just like, where did they all go? How many planes did they have? How many people were on these planes? So.
That's right. So we're just gonna assume that that there were multiple shots, multiple angles of him picking people up, and therefore it's only
There you
14. Even though there's only 10 that jump out of the plane, but whatever. That's and then we get a shot on the plane, and we see two of the guys dealing with their
go.
maps, going over stuff to make sure that they got it right. And one of them says, if the wire constant is sensitive, then I think all we should have to deal with is, and then he gets cut off as the shot changes, watching other men get into the plane themselves. Once everyone's in, so Winters then lifts up his own that's not connected to him, like everyone else had connected for them to put on the plane itself, as he easily gets up, just like everyone else didn't. So, and then we hear one of the guys go, "God damn, Lieb." And then Liebgott says that airsick pill is making me loopy. The book does describe the fact that everyone reacted differently to the airsick pills. Some people would put them to sleep. Some people it made them I guess insomniacs at the time.
Interesting.
Some of them just felt that they were on drugs. I mean, it's very weird, the whole way that whole thing
Was an
happened.
interesting calculated risk of being like, well, we don't want them to throw up, but what else could happen? And obviously a lot of
That's right.
different kinds of things happened to all the different soldiers for sure.
And then the music gets cued even more, and we get to see the plane getting ready to get into position to take off, and we get shots of the various men, we get shots of the whole airfield. We see all the planes getting into formation, getting ready to start taking off. I mean, just, again, they're showing us the vast amount of resources that were being used for the invasion force. And the first plane takes off, and then we get a shot of the second plane taking off, and we see other planes in the sky as it's going. And again, it's just amazing to see all of these planes, one after the other, just filled with anywhere between 10 and 15 men getting ready
Anywhere between there.
to
It
go
just the
somewhere.
combination of the cinematography, all this setup, and the music, there's just something, I don't know, like majestic might be a strong word, but like there just felt like something really you're watching something very impressive and happening in front of you.
I would agree with the word majestic, because again, I like the way that it's done. And again, they're spending like 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes showing us all of this. Which again, we've talked about you're limited with time, and to spend the time doing that, it means that you have something important that you want people to see.
Well, and they captured the weight of this moment really well. And it gets the audience into this feeling of something big is happening for sure.
Because again, the irony is that I'm assuming that the majority of the people who have watched this miniseries are familiar with Saving Private Ryan. So you're familiar with a different aspect of D-Day. And here you have these guys going that they're going to be, their mission is going to be very different, because they're coming from the air as opposed to coming from the sea. That type of thing. Anyone who's seen The Longest Day knows already what's going to be happening here. That's something else, but it's still done really well
Well, and I think it
in order to make us feel what these characters are going through.
exactly, and it's interesting because World War II as a whole was such a complicated and layered and vast occurrence. Because even just thinking about like from a film perspective, there's so many different World War II movies that capture so many different aspects. And then even just thinking about D-Day, How many different beaches? Who are you focusing on? Are you focusing on the Americans coming on, or the British, or the Canadian? Like all of these different layers. And then you have the paratroopers and all of just how complex and such a big moment this was in the war. There's so many different perspectives you can tell. And that's why this is such an interesting, obviously, Steven Spielberg thought this was a very interesting companion piece to the film that he made, and being involved in some shape or form with this. Of you got the water and ground front, now you have this whole other story of those who went in first and had a job to do.
I love the way that they do it. It gives us so much by the way that it's done.
Absolutely.
We get shots of the various men. Again, it's sometimes hard because of the lighting and the fact that they're in under all the gear to figure out who's who. You can pick out Garnier because for some reason he's sitting there without a helmet. I don't know why. Finally get a shot of Winters standing or crouching in the doorway looking out at at the ground underneath as they're flying along. And as we get that's where the this segment will end. So Shane, did you have anything else you wanted to mention about this particular 5-minute segment or about the miniseries in
I think
general?
just in general, this was a very powerful segment of this first episode because all this leads up to this. And they did such a great job of capturing just the weight of this moment. And, they dedicated the time to it, which is why most of our segment for this episode was specifically dedicated to like these planes flying off and spending that time. And Kamen's score just underlines the whole thing. And for me personally, I'm very excited. I watched the first three episodes and they got really, really busy the past 2 weeks and didn't get to continue to watch some more of this. But my hope is that my semester is going to be wrapping up soon and I'll have a little extra time to make sure I hammer out those seven other episodes and get a chance to see the whole picture of this miniseries. But from what I've seen so far, this is really powerful stuff and really impressive storytelling, and it's a really impressive show.
Yeah, I think so. Have you seen Master of the Air and
So
the
I've seen
Pacific?
Masters of the Air, because I am much more current on like current television, because like I keep up with stuff. I watched that as it was coming out on Apple TV Plus, but especially after wrapping up Band of Brothers, I hope to check out the Pacific as well.
Okay, because I again, not to bias you or anything, but I think Band of Brothers is the best of the three. But the other two are all still amazing. I'm not belittling Masters of the Air or the Pacific because I really enjoy the Pacific. The Masters of the Air I've only seen once, and I have plans at some point to try and watch it again. The Pacific I've seen numerous times, and I love it. I think it's great, but it's not as focused as Band of Brothers is. And again, Band of Brothers put the bar really, really high, and it's not easy to reach that high, that high of a bar once it's set like that. So it's a little bit of a problem. But hey, what can you do? All right, today's segment will be a segment called "Oh Brother," where my guest will give their top five movies featuring or about brothers. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Funny, because I'm going to start with my number five as a film that I mentioned in two episodes ago is actually The Blues Brothers. This is a film that I've watched so many times. I love the dynamic between Jake and Elwood, and there's so many shenanigans in this film, but at the heart of it's two brothers trying to accomplish something together. My next one, number four, I have The Iron Claw. So this is a pretty recent one on here. I'm a big professional wrestling fan, and when I heard that they were making a film about the Von Erich family, I was super excited about it. I was blown away by Zac Efron and the whole rest of this cast, bringing this very tragic story of these brothers who a lot of them didn't make it for a whole variety of reasons, but that it's interesting seeing their brotherhood together and also a lot of the toxic dynamics with their father that pushed them to some bad places. My number three is Ron from Akira Kurosawa, which this is a adaptation of King Lear from William Shakespeare. So this isn't exactly about a story about brothers being good to each other, but it is about, these brothers all vying for control and power from their father, who they feel like should, step aside. And it just has that epic samurai feel that Akira Kurosawa created. My number two is On the Waterfront, which I know this film has a lot going on in it, but that dynamic between Terry and Charlie is so key to it. And the most famous scene in this is the two of them sitting there and having this tense conversation about their relationship and everything Terry has given up and stuff like that. This is a powerful film, one of my favorites. And my number one, and this is a film that I watched when I was 10 years old, because it's, as my grandfather told me, it's part of my culture, being an Italian American. It's The Godfather, which this is a film, obviously it's a gangster film and a gangster epic with all those elements, but at the core of it, it's about a family. It's about a group of brothers, and all of them having different abilities and coming from different perspectives. And just, it's heartbreaking seeing how this family is fractured throughout these films. And but it's still very powerful seeing that whole family dynamic, which it feels very authentic coming from Italian American filmmaker Francis Ford Coppola, who really understands, like, family is a very big part of Italian American culture for sure. So I think that's why this film speaks to me on a deeper level, even more than, considered one of the greatest films of all time.
Okay, that is fair enough. Nicely done. Thank you very much for that list. Okay, so now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie, and hopefully it'll be another one that you've actually
There you
seen.
go.
All right, so let's spin the wheel, and around and around and around we go. Where that wheel will stop, you never know. This is a movie from 1965 starring Frank Sinatra and Trevor Howard about a group of POWs, British and Americans, that need to find a way to escape from the Germans.
Very funny, because I keep getting POW ones, whether it's trivia or Name the
I
World War
know,
II
I was
film,
going
and
to
it's
say that.
not the Great Escape.
No, it is not.
I hear
Frank Sinatra was not in The Great
he
Escape.
certainly was not. But hey, I don't think I know this one at all, because like I think the only World War II film I could think of with Frank Sinatra is From Here to Eternity. But I don't even know if I have a guess for this one. I'm just going to throw out a name of a movie, and I don't think it's right, but Bun Ryan Express.
And you would be right.
Well, this,
Shane, you got it right.
well, when you watch enough movies and know enough about movies, you know names of movies that you haven't seen before, and you might get it right. So I got very lucky on that one, but I'm going to take it.
Yes, and I think what this tells us is that you need to go rewatch it. That's what it needs. That's what this
Well, that's
is.
the thing. I haven't seen this one. I'm just aware of it that it's a movie, so
No, sorry. It means you need to go. You need to put it on your list. That's
I
what it
do
says.
need to put this on my list. So there you go. So the biggest thing out of all of this is I have some movies to add to my watch list, so which I always appreciate. So there we go.
Okay. I'm glad to be able to help. Definitely glad to help. All right. So Shane, would you like to one more time tell people where they can find Shane Cantu?
Yes. So you can check out my Instagram, The Wasteland Reviewer. That's where I shamelessly plug all the things that I do. I have my link tree there, centralizes everything, but primarily YouTuber. So The Wasteland Reviewer YouTube channel, where I review tons of movies and three weekly shows that I have. I have my website, thewastelandreviewer.blog, with written reviews and weekly and monthly articles. I write for Knock on Wood Film and SifPop.com occasionally, and I have my podcast over on the SPDM Crew Podcasting Network, and dabble into Substack recently as well. So, check out some of it, any of it. But so there you go.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to MovieRobMinute@MovieRob.net. So, Shane, thank you very much for joining me the last few days.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity to come.
Definitely very important. All right. So I will be back tomorrow with another guest. But until then, Curry.
Curry.